Rishin, about the sages. Sadhun, about the devotees. Sarvan, all of them. Varnan, sections. Tata, as also. Ashraman, orders of human society. Translation, I'm thinking about myself and also, O best among the demigods, about you, as well as about all the demigods, sages, denizens of Pitraloka, devotees of the Lord, and all men obedient to the system of Varna and Ashrama in human society. Purport, to affect the perfection of human life, there is cooperation between men and demigods, sages, denizens of the Pitraloka, devotees of the Lord, and the scientific system of Varna and Ashrama, orders of life. The distinction between human life and animal life therefore begins with the scientific system of Varna and Ashrama, guided by the experience of the sages in relation with the demigods, gradually rising to the summit of re-establishing our eternal relation with the Supreme Absolute Truth, the Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna. When God made Varnashram Dharma, which is strictly meant for developing animal consciousness into human consciousness, and human consciousness into godly consciousness, is broken by advancement of foolishness, the whole system of peaceful and progressive life is at once disturbed. In the age of Kali, the first attack of the venomous snake strikes against the God-made Varnashram Dharma, and thus a person properly qualified as a Brahmana is called a Sudra, and a Sudra by qualification is passing as a Brahmana, all on false birthright claim. To become a Brahmana by a birthright claim is not at all bona fide, although it may be a fulfillment of one of the conditions. But the real qualification of a Brahmana is to control the mind and senses and to cultivate tolerance, simplicity, cleanliness, knowledge, truthfulness, devotion, and faith in the Vedic wisdom. In the present age, consideration of the necessary qualification is being neglected, and the false birthright claim is being supported even by a popular, sophisticated poet, the author of Brahmacharita Manasa. This is all due to the influence of the age of Kali. Thus, Mother Earth, represented as a cow, was lamenting the regrettable condition. Translation, I am thinking about myself and also, O best among the demigods, about you, as well as all the demigods, sages, denizens of Pitraloka, devotees of the Lord, and all men obedient to the system of Varna and Ashrama in human society. So the previous verses were all about the Supreme Lord, Krishna, and all of his wonderful qualities, and how in his absence one must lament. It was also previously mentioned that by the sages of Naimisaranya that when Krishna goes, he takes Dharma with him. And thus, we have a problem in Kali Yuga. So of course the answer to that was that Srimad Bhagavatam has come in the place of Krishna. So Krishna is gone, but when Krishna goes, then we have a whole series of faults that appear in Kali Yuga. So these are the faults some of the faults being listed in this verse. So the cow says, I lament for myself, which means the earth. The cow is the earth. So the cow is lamenting for the condition of the earth and also for you, Bhavantam, that means the bull. And the bull represents Dharma. So both are in poor condition. And as well, the cow is lamenting for the condition of the devatas, the pitras, the sages, the devotees, and the Varnashram system. All of these are put into a miserable condition in Kali Yuga. Now, of course, devatas, pitras, and sages don't necessarily get affected by what happens to us in Kali Yuga. It is said in the ninth canto that, that the effects of the yugas are evident in Bharat Varsha, which is only one little section of Jambudvip. The other parts of Jambudvip are heavenly planets, more or less. So Bharat Varsha is the portion that gets all these bad effects of Kali Yuga. So what to speak of heavenly planets and other places, they don't get really affected like we get affected. But why do the devatas and pitras and rishis suffer? One is that we have, as human beings on earth here, we have obligations to fulfill to those devatas, rishis, and pitras. We have to worship them properly. And in the Varnashram system, there are procedures for daily worship of the devatas, the pitras, and the rishis, etc. And if you don't worship them properly, then they are upset. And also, a result of that, of course, is the earth also suffers because they don't cooperate with the people on earth, and we end up with problems. So they're not, in one sense, suffering because they're beyond the effects of Kali Yuga, but they suffer in the sense that they cannot perform their duties properly because of the degraded condition on the earth at this time. The devotees, on the other hand, we can say also don't suffer in one sense because the devotees are not attached to the material world, and in any condition, such a treta dwarpa kali, they perform devotional service and they're unaffected by their surroundings. Bhakti can be performed on any yuga and on any varsha within Bhumandala and the Jambudvip, or on any dvipa there, and any lower planet down to Patala Loka. We see in Patala Loka we have Yamaraj, great devotee of the Lord. So even in lower planets one can perform bhakti. And then on the higher planets, all of the personalities there are devotees of the Lord. So bhakti is performed everywhere at all times within the universe, and of course beyond the universe in Vaikuntha. That's where the devotees are fully manifested in their bliss. So, in one sense, the devotees don't have to suffer because of the conditions. However, for personally, they don't suffer, but we do find there are obstacles to the devotees. And there's more obstacles as we get into Kali Yuga. The obstacles in the form of bad environment, and bad society, and hostility, persecution, etc. All these things come about. The more sinful people become, then the more they'll persecute a person who is saintly or practicing Dharma. So the devotees in that way get some suffering. The last item here is the Varna Ashram system. That also is a subject of lamentation because we see that it gets disintegrated in Kali Yuga. So in the purport, Srila Prabhupada discusses how or why the system gets corrupted. If we look at that system, many people will criticize the system. Why do we have to even discuss this system? Because it's a very bad system. And that was the prevalent mood among modernistic people after the British arrived and began to educate the Indians. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, now it is quite prevalent that our young generation, that's the young people educated under the British system, they're all criticizing this Varnashram system, saying let's get rid of it, let's destroy it. So he said, this is very unfortunate because actually it's a perfect system. However, it has been corrupted over time and therefore we have, it doesn't look perfect anymore. It is full of faults. So therefore you can criticize it, but because of the faults. But a wise person does not reject that perfect system because of the faults. Rather, he will try to correct the faults and put the system back in proper order. So therefore he praises that Varnashram system as being a perfect system for the human being. Because and it operates in a perfect way if people are judged by qualification. And according to the qualification, they are put into certain occupations. So we get the Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Sudras. And by qualification, they get the particular work. And of course, related to that is what is called Swabhav, which means your nature. So whatever nature you have, then according to that nature, you show different qualities. And according to that, the nature and your qualities, then your occupation gets fixed. Well, that seems to be very rational. You employ yourself or you act according to your abilities. And therefore you're very happy in doing that because you're working within your capacities. Natural. So that is the original way in which this Varna system worked. That's according to qualification and nature, Swabhava. Adhikar and Swabhava, these two elements. But then he says, because they introduced the birth qualification and they gave prominence to the birth, the whole system got corrupted. So that means if you're born in a where your father is a Brahmana, you become a Brahmana. If your father is a Kshatriya, you become a Kshatriya. If your father is a Sudra, you're a Sudra. So that the designation is automatic with your birth, without regard for your nature or your qualification. So you're put into an occupation not by your qualities of nature, but just by your birth. So this can become very unnatural because you're doing the wrong work. So if one is born in the Sudra family, but one has brahminical qualities, why you shouldn't do the brahminical work? But then if the birth is emphasized, you have to do the Sudra work, and you can't do anything else. If you do, it's considered to be offense. So because of this emphasis upon the birth, then people, everyone becomes, they're doing the wrong occupations. And nobody is satisfied. Someone may be born in a Brahmana family, but he has Sudra tendencies, so he can't really do the work of a Brahmana. So with all these Varnas, then if the birth is the only qualification, we end up with a lot of people doing the wrong jobs all the time. And then the system falls apart because they can't do those jobs perfectly also. The Sudra who's not a Sudra, he won't work properly because he doesn't want to work in the heavy jobs. He would rather be an intellectual, so he won't do any job there. And the person who's a Brahmana but is actually a Sudra by nature, he can't do any mental work or intellectual work because he doesn't have any interest in it. So, in this way, the system got corrupted by overemphasis on birth. Of course, Bhaktivinoda Thakur also says, there is some truth in emphasizing birth, because generally we find that a brahminical parent has a brahminical child or whatever like that by hereditary or environmental factors, but it's not an absolute rule. So therefore when you overemphasize the birthright, then we end up with a lot of unqualified people and a lot of dissatisfied people in the society. Historically, they explain that why did Buddhism arise? Because the Vaishyas and people got dissatisfied. The Brahmanas were controlling everything, and they got dissatisfied. So then they left the Vedas completely, and they joined the Buddhist movement because of that, whatever. So people become dissatisfied when they're not allowed to display their qualities and their qualification properly. So he says that's the problem, and therefore when it came to the 18th, 19th centuries, then the British would make fun of this whole Varnashram system. They say, oh, it's ridiculous, you know, because you're condemned by your birth to be stuck in a certain Varna and you can't advance simply because of birth. And of course, there's a whole political movement that took place in India, especially with independence again, that, we have to raise up the people from the lower birth, so they give them privileges in society, and they condemn the Brahmanas who by birth, they don't give them anything. They don't get any privileges. And then those who are born in the lower caste, they get all the privileges, so to speak, economic, educational, whatever like that, which also happens in other countries in the world. But anyway, there's a political movement against castes or Varna also. So if you mention Varnashram for many people, then they will criticize it, not only in Bhaktivinoda's time and afterwards, but even in the modern world, when with independence of India, a lot of people were opposed to this Varnashram system as being corrupted and old-fashioned and restricting and prejudiced, etc. So therefore, in the modern world again, sometimes if you mention Varnashram in India, people will not appreciate it too much. the point is that if it is implemented properly, it's a natural system. So Prabhupada here says it is a scientific system. Not because we're dealing with atoms and protons in the Varnashram system, not that type of science, but it is a very well thought out system that works very nicely and gives good results. So it's a perfect social system produced with a great wisdom. So the sages are responsible for that, because we have the sages writing the Smriti works, like Manu Smriti and Vishnu Smriti and Parasara Smriti, etc. There's many works that describe the intricacies and the rules of that system. However, ultimately, system comes from the Supreme Lord. Krishna says, I'm the maker of that system. Therefore, it must be perfect, because it is produced by the Lord, and it is detailed by the great sages. So it is perfect when it is implemented properly. And when it is not implemented properly, then we'll end up with a lot of problems. So when that system gets destroyed, then we'll have a lot of problems. And that is what is mentioned here. We see that the cow is lamenting, the earth is lamenting because of this Varnashram system. It is not operating properly in Kali Yuga. So there is a choice in society. One can follow that system, and of course those people that follow the system are called Aryans, the civilized people. Those people that don't want to follow the system, then they're called uncivilized. So that was the distinction. You follow the system, you're considered proper, and if you don't follow, you're very low like that. So in the Chaitanya Charitamrita also there's a description of the grades of living entities, from the plants to the animals, and then we get to the human beings. And then among the human beings, then we get the upper human beings, those that follow the Varnashram system. So those are called the civilized people. They're following the scientific system, in which people are engaged according to their qualities. Then, of course, there's also some sort of a mission there, that even that is not perfect, because we may get a Brahmana in name only, which means he's not really qualified as a Brahmana. He's not doing the activity of a Brahmana. So superior to the persons who are Brahmanas or Kshatriyas in name only, we got the ones who are actually performing their duty. So that's the superior system. But even though we can say it's a perfect social system, superior to that are the devotees of the Lord. They're beyond the Varnashram system. So though we can praise the Varnashram system, we shouldn't think that's the ultimate goal of life. Above that is bhakti and the devotees. Now, it's not that the devotees reject the system. It may appear like that from Chaitanya Charitamrita, because we see that when Lord Chaitanya met the followers of Madhvacharya in Udupi in South India, they had some discussions, and they were talking about the ultimate goal in life. So the sannyasis of the Madhva Sampradaya said Varnashram is the ultimate goal. And then Lord Chaitanya says, no. Prema is the goal. So, and of course, in several places, there is a rejection of that system in favor of bhakti. At the same time, we see that Lord Chaitanya did not reject the system because he followed the system. He was a sannyasi within that Varnashram system, even though at that time it wasn't operating perfectly also. But he was operating within the remnants of a Varnashram system, and sannyas is one of the ashramas there. So he was a brahmana, born as a brahmana within that system. So he didn't completely reject it. Yeah. And we see later acharyas also did not reject that system. Acharyas like Vishnu Chakravarti or Baladeva Vidyabhusan, they did not reject that system. Yeah. But at the same time, they understood that bhakti operates independently of that system, and we can't fix or judge everybody by Varnashram Dharma. The principle of bhakti is higher than that. So, the Varnashram system should be implemented properly because human beings are social animals. They like to congregate together and gather in groups, and when they do that, then we have to have some organization in terms of who's going to work and who's going to supply food and who's going to administer, who's going to counsel. We have to get some divisions there ultimately of work. And so the whole question is, how are we going to do it? Because the people on the bottom will say, no, we want to be on the top. Or the majority rules, as in democracy. So the majority of the people are in the lower qualification, the sudras. They're in any particular society, it's said that the sudras are the majority. Maybe there's 60 or 70% of the society. So if they get the vote, then they will vote a sudra into power. They'll give them all the good occupations, you know, the higher occupations. So how do we decide who gets what job? If it's a democracy, it doesn't seem to work because we put the sudra on the top because that's the majority. So this is the whole problem. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that the elders, this is not working in a democratic society, it's working in the traditional society, the family members, the immediate family, or the bigger group like the village and the heads of the village and the elders, etc., they get together. And then they look at the child when he's growing up, when he's maybe 18 years old, and they look at him and they see all of his qualities. Then they say, okay, you do this occupation. Eh? If you have brahminical qualities, you do the brahmana work. If you have sudra qualities, you do the sudra occupation, whatever like that. So they were the persons who decided his qualification. And then he works within the qualification. And if it's true, if they judge correctly, then he's satisfied. And he becomes very productive in that particular work. Yeah. In Kali Yuga, system has fallen apart for many reasons. One, of course, is that everybody wants to be on top. Other is that there's no king to control everybody and put everybody in their proper place. And there's no authority structure there, proper authority structure, so the system cannot operate properly then. So this is a cause of lamentation. If we don't have a proper social structure, then the mass of people are always discontent and subject to all sorts of problems and agitations and discontent and revolution, whatever. And in that condition, it is not very favorable for this normal material life, what to speak of being a devotee and performing devotional service. So in that sense, we are related to society because we do have a body, and it's better to have a stable social system than a completely disturbed social system. Nevertheless, in spite of the conditions of Kali Yuga, bhakti can survive. So that's the whole message of Bhagavatam. Even if it is Kali Yuga, if we have the Bhagavatam as our authority, as our source of knowledge, and we take its guidance properly, then we can still progress within Kali Yuga. The Varnashram system is praised because it's good for society in general. and it produces a system where everybody can be satisfied and work and survive with the material body and get a little bit more in terms of sense enjoyment. So we get artha and kama as the immediate goals for the majority of people, and satisfied with that. But they also have to get a little bit of spiritual impetus. So within that system, we have worship of the Lord, and a desire implicit to go beyond the material world. Therefore, we have moksha as the ultimate goal of that system. So the system is not in itself direct bhakti. It's not the highest goal in itself, but it aids the person in terms of taking care of his physical body. So in that sense, the devotees also accept that varnashram system as a factor in cultivating bhakti, a preliminary factor. Yeah. However, we do know that as the devotees advance, they become more detached from the material body and more detached from society in general. And therefore, even if there are disturbances in society, the devotee can still perform his sadhana peacefully, and he can still advance in devotional service. So the advancement of bhakti is not dependent upon the external circumstances. It's an internal cultivation. And the devotee has sufficient detachment that he doesn't get disturbed by the externals. Nevertheless, the devotee is also compassionate to all living entities, so he's compassionate to the human beings, and if he sees them all in a confused state, he wants to help them somehow or other. So one, of course, is to advise them to adopt a system like this where everybody can be peaceful. But if they can't do that, or not willing to do that, at least individually they can cultivate bhakti. So that's how the for society in general. So we can try both things and see what is suitable to the group of people or the individual. And in this way we show our compassion to the people of Kali Yuga. Okay, any questions?
Observation I asked that the British they really killed the Varnashram system in India, saying that sort of can be quite birthright, but history shows that the British social system is very caste conscious also, or class conscious.
With the aristocrats and the kings and the nobles. Yeah.
But there's a question that we talk about Bhana Sanskara, unwanted population. Mm. But Arjuna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita that due to irreligion becoming prominent, that Bhana Sanskara will increase. But is this just something for Kali Yuga, or like unwanted population would be prevalent throughout the ages? Like, basically, what's the prime cause of
this unwanted population? Oh, well, of course, it increases in Kali Yuga. Yeah. So that can be in the form of separated families, mm-hmm. Children without parents, or children and mothers without fathers, so they don't have any support like this. Or maybe it's father and child with no mother, or we're going to have mixed classes, the varnas intermix. So if you intermix the varnas, it's more difficult even to tell who's who, because the child is what, we don't know what he is, because he's got a Vaishya father and a Brahmana mother. Then is he a Kshatriya, is he a Brahmana? Of course that's the birth part of it. So it's confusing as there's mixtures of the castes. Apart from the disqualification standard, but even by birth it becomes more mixed up. And if the family unit is broken up, where there's no mother, father with the child, then generally the child grows up and they're unproductive in society. They can't decide what his varna is, and he doesn't even want a varna or an ashram or anything, so he doesn't want to do anything. He wants to avoid the whole society, so he becomes unproductive.
It seems each generation it gets worse than the last.
So the whole basis, one of the foundations of that Varnashram system is a stable family unit. But if that's broken, then immediately we start getting all sorts of problems with the offspring. In the case of the battle of Kurukshetra, then all the men get killed and the women are left and they don't have any support. So what do they do with their children? You know, how do they support their children? How do they grow up? How do they raise their children? So that's the problem also.
Yeah, I did see in one version of the Mahabharata mentioned that it wasn't the battle for Kurukshetra, it was after Parashuram killed all the Kshatriyas and so many wives were widows, and that they began to approach Brahmanas for getting offspring.
Oh, okay. On a large scale or even on a small scale, it's very difficult because people, they don't want to submit because somebody's going to set a law up or a rule. So we don't want to follow that rule like that. So that indicates the lack of the authority, which is ultimately coming back to the king, is missing. The descendant of Manu is missing, and he is supposed to be empowered by the Lord to institute the system properly. But if we don't have that, then everybody else will speculate about what to do and how to implement the system, etc. So that's one problem. So the other point we can make maybe is that we can't do it properly or in detail, but we can take some of the principles like engagement according to your swabhava, your nature, and your qualities. That this goes, you know, that's a natural thing. So we try to engage everybody according to that. So that's one particular thing. The other, of course, is that marriage itself should be among people of, you know, equal qualification. And then there's less possibility of conflict and whatever. And then the children will also be raised in a healthy environment. So we can take some of the principles there and try to implement that within the smaller ISKCON society at least.
The aspect of the ashram, that's also very important. We tend to focus on the varnas, but I did establish the ashram system. And my understanding also is the varnas are only applicable to Grihastas anyhow, it's not like for all ashrams.
Yeah, they're the piece of the occupation. The brahmacharis just study, and the vanaprasas give up their occupation. The sannyasis also don't have. So the grihastas have the occupation because they have to support a family. So they support the family and support the whole society. So they're the subject of that varnas. And the ashramas, the sudras are only qualified for marriage, grihastha ashram. So the education is only for the upper varnas, the Vaishyas, Kshatriyas, and Brahmanas. So they become brahmacharis. And then the renunciation, they can take vanaprastha, but only the brahmanas can take sannyas, because they're more detached. So their qualification is detachment, so therefore they're qualified for sannyas more than the others. So there's a relationship between the ashramas and the varnas in one sense. But that's the system is there. The ashram system is there, one, so that at least Vaishyas, Kshatriyas, and Brahmanas get some spiritual education. Some spiritual education, depending on how many years they stay in the Gurukul system, study the Vedas. And secondly, that as you grow older, you should become more detached. So after Grihastha, then you should take Vanaprastha, or if you're qualified, take Sannyas. So it indicates that the material world ultimately has to be given up in favor of spiritual life. So there is that tendency to go towards spiritual life, the emphasis put there through the ashram system. If it's only varnas, then you get stuck there and you just, it's all artha kama all the way through with no idea of moksha or bhakti. This is one problem in setting up such a system, because we can't be completely isolated. There are groups that do that, like the Amish or something in America. They isolated groups and they have their rules in there. If you want to follow it, you stay there, but if you're going to break the rules, out, finished, and you can't go back and forth like that. So you're either in or out, and they isolate the society from the rest of society. But we're more or less kind of half-half. We're preaching in society. We're doing so many things in society, get influenced by their ideas, etc. So therefore the children get influenced also. Even if we raise them in one way, they go out in society, they get influenced that way. So it's very difficult to, and then who joins and who doesn't join, it's a little, there's a, like a gray line there. We have people in Mobile and Bar and people here, interchanges going back and forth, and they're all devotees, but then some devotees are, we can enforce the devotees here, but we cannot enforce the same rules on the devotees outside. So it's very problematic when we have to communicate and have interactions with the rest of society. That's one problem we have in implementing such a system. So, yeah. How to do that, I don't really know, but obviously one solution is isolate. Just don't have that. It's your in or out, finished, and that's it. There's no interaction going back and forth. But then that's a rather harsh rule also, and it also may limit our preaching, how we preach to people also. So there's pluses and minuses in such a system.
Srila Prabhupada speaking about the diseased nature of society, and he gave the example of medicines, like if somebody got jaundice, then the cure for jaundice is sugar. You give someone who's got jaundice sugar and it tastes awfully bitter, so they reject it in the beginning. I experienced a similar example when with hypothyroid, that said that to cure the thyroid you need kelp.
Kelp.
Thyroid, you know, seaweed. But this thyroid said if the body rejects it, it doesn't work, it makes it worse. But then somebody said that actually what you do is inject small doses of this and then actually builds up and it cures it. The same way as jaundice or whatever, sometimes you have to start with really
dosage.
As long as with the Varna Ashram, of course, the society in general is totally, you know, they've lost it as far as their systems go. But then if we just say, like you said, we say Varna Ashram, then they go, oh, that's also. But the fact is that it's, Prabhupada specifying it and it's consistent.
Yeah, so how to do it though, yeah.
So we just do it in small doses, we just keep talking about it and sort of acting on it from our attachment. Yeah.
The other thing, we can't force anybody either within society at large. All we can do is suggest to them, so then it's also a problem, because usually they don't take good suggestions. We say, meat is bad for you, they don't want to accept it. So we can't force anything, we can give suggestions, but that at least we can say, follow the four regular principles. And even that is very difficult for most people to follow. But we can only keep offering it to them, and maybe sooner or later they get some good sense and they're willing to follow, but what can we do? You know?
Hare Krishna. We just discussed the importance of giving children a gurukul education so that they can get trained up in the Vedic scriptures. Maybe I'm wrong, but my understanding for some gurukul kids, I've seen the Gurukul in Mathura, and I think they're doing amazing things there. It seems like some of them have difficulty integrating back into Western society.
Yeah.
I just wonder if there's a strategy where they can kind of get the best of both worlds.
Yeah. Well, that's the whole problem, yeah. If we do have a separate education, then we can't predict what they're going to do, whether they want to live in that society or they want to live among the devotees. You know, we can't predict that. So then how do we do the education? So, of course, one system is just, we don't worry about that, just give them the Vedic-type education as they do in the Gurukul there in Mayapur, or give them a broader education as they do in the other school in Mayapur, in which they take regular exams and they qualified for getting a higher degree in, you know, some university outside like that. So we got two systems that we're operating. And of course it's up to the parents to choose which one they want to go for, you know, according to their ambition for their children. Unfortunately, if the children, after getting the more restricted education of the Gurukul, then they decide, I want to work in the world, then it's more difficult for them. You know? But the other person, on the other hand, he could go either way, who's educated with that, getting a degree, etc. They could work there, or they could also, go further into bhakti and work among the devotees themselves. So it's all up to the parents how they want to educate their children.
I'm wondering if it could work like a bit of half and half, if you, like, maybe in the early years had that traditional Gurukul, and as they turned to teenagers, moved into more mainstream education.
I don't know, they could try that. Maybe they try that here, maybe. So here they have a school, and that's according to the regular system, so definitely they can participate in regular society because they get a regular, you know, standard and degree, etc., from that school, so they could go to college or whatever, so no problem there. So that's one way of doing it, but then, you know, some people say, no, we have to be more strict and have a Gurukul, like a regular Gurukul, but then the problem is that, you know, they don't get all the standards of the regular school. And some say, well, it's nonsense anyway, why should we listen to those standards anyway? But then the children may not, you know, they may not also accept later on that they didn't educate me properly, and they'll blame the parents. So, yeah, some difficulty is there. Okay, Hare Krishna.